Okay, hello and welcome to the Arroyo Grande Gover Beach Chamber of Commerce Candidate Forum for the Arroyo Grande City Council. My name is Josh Martin. I'm the chairman of the board this year, so I'll be emceeing this event. We have three candidates seated here in alphabetical order. We have Tim Brown to my left, Joe Costello in the middle, and Barbara Harmon on the far left. So a couple minutes on rules, and then we'll get started. So we'll begin with a three-minute introductory comment from each candidate. Did you see that catch? No. Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to put this over here so it doesn't fall. Okay, so we'll begin with 3 minutes of introductory comments from each candidate. There'll be a timekeeper here in the front row who will let you candidates know when there's 30 seconds left for you to conclude your remarks, and then they'll give you a big red stop sign if you've gone over the time limit. And then at that point, I'll try to be gentle about getting you to stop talking. Okay, so after the 3 minutes introductory comments from each candidate, we'll get into questions. The questions will be sorted by the folks to my right here who are with the Chamber of Commerce. They'll be reading them, sorting them, and then handing them to me, and then I will be reading them, asking them of each of the candidates. We'll start question one with Mr. Brown, and question two would be started with Mr. Costello. Question three would be started with Ms. Harmon, et cetera. So there won't be any raising your hand and asking questions. That's too unruly and too disorganized. We're going to do it through the submission of written questions over here to the right. And that's really about it. So I think we'll begin with some introductory comments from Mr. Brown. 3 minutes.
Thank you so much. Is this on, first of all? Tim, you got a button on. Oh, you got to be smarter than the board here.
There you go. Lower your thumb. Right there. Good. It's not just...
Okay, how's that, folks?
Okay, so... Just briefly, I'm not big on talking about myself, but I will. I've been involved with Arroyo Grande City politics since the 2000 general plan update. I got involved over the issue of prime farm soils within Arroyo Grande. We have 300 acres of prime farm soil within the city limits. And if you were to go throughout California and look around, you'd find there are very few cities in the state of California with that level of ag soil within Arroyo Grande or within their city limits. So that's what got me passionate. That's what got me started. Jim Dickens, a prior city councilman, put me on the planning commission, and that's how I ended up here today. I've had a couple stints on planning commission. I did a 4-year stint, and then I took a year off while my dad was terminally ill, and then I got invited back afterward. And so that's kind of the premise of how I got involved with city politics. I have a degree from business finance from Cal Poly with a concentration in real estate finance. And my other big things are I'm a very conservative fiscal person, and I don't like it when we waste money unnecessarily, so that's another big issue. And then originally, when I first got on the Planning Commission, we were in the middle of redoing the village guidelines and trying to protect the village. And that's been done, and I'm comfortable with that. And I think we now need to focus on farther on down Grand and get some of the other parts of Grand that have been ignored. And I think they need some help and some energy. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Costello?
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been involved in city politics here at the city of Arroyo Grande for about 16 years. I spent 4 years on the Planning Commission, two of them as the chair, and then I've been elected 3 times, so I've been here 12 years. Professionally, I worked for the state of California. I'm an emergency management instructor coordinator. I've been doing that for about 25 years, and it's been an interesting blend because in doing the instructing that I do, I work with cities and counties and special districts, all levels of them, all different departments. And it's given me a keen insight into city politics, and city politics has really helped me do my job. Educationally, I've got a bachelor's degree from the University of San Francisco and an MBA from the University of San Francisco. My wife and I have lived here for a little over 25 years. We've got 3 children. We've raised them all here. My son was born here. My daughters were 5 and 8 when we moved here, and had a wonderful environment. It's been a privilege to serve the people of Rio Grande. I, too, have been involved in preserving agricultural land here. That was one of the key parts of when I first got elected 12 years ago, was making sure that we protect our ag land. I've been very proud of what we've done to bring the village, buff it up, and make it shine. It's the jewel of the Central Coast, I think. We've got a wonderful old village, and we've made it better without detracting from it. We've managed to keep the chains out, bring in new restaurants, new businesses. It's a very vital district, and I'm very proud of that, and I look forward to it continuing to be vital and bring in more businesses. Look forward to the questions you got for me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Costello. Mrs. Harmon.
Greetings, everyone. I've lived in Rio Grande for almost 30 years. My background is in law enforcement, having worked 23 years for the Santa Barbara County Probation Department as a probation officer and supervisor. I devoted my career to protecting the public and keeping citizens safe. My 23 years of county government experience, that includes budget proposals, strategic planning, policy development, grant implementation and oversight, process improvements, enforcement of state laws, and working directly with the public make me uniquely qualified to bring a new perspective to the City Council. For the past year and a half, I have attended City Council meetings. I have reviewed and analyzed each agenda item presented. In October 2013, I went for the appointment for the vacated City Council seat. And in December 2013, I was appointed to the Architectural Review Committee. I've completed the County Citizens Planning Academy. I'm a member of the Bridge Street Bridge Committee, a member of the Aurora Grande Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce, and I am an avid bicyclist. My husband and I have been married for 25 years, and we have made our home in the village of Aurora Grande. I am running for Aurora Grande City Council to bring a new perspective, a perspective that will promote the growth and prosperity of our local businesses and promote head of household jobs, a perspective that will protect our city's unique historical culture and charm, our agricultural heritage, and keep our city safe, and most important, a perspective that will question regulations and ordinances that lead to new fees, assessments, raise taxes, or impede our business growth. Aurora Grande deserves a city council member who they can trust, one who will listen to the community's concerns and needs, one who will advocate for what is best for our city. I promise to have an open door policy because I want to hear from you. I am dedicated to serving our city and making our city even better than it is. So thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your busy schedule and coming here and listening to what we have to say. Help me bring a new perspective to this city council. I am asking for your support and your vote in November. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mrs. Harmon. So we'll begin with questions now. Just a reminder to the candidates, you'll have 1 minute to answer each question. That's pretty quick, so keep that in mind. We'll begin with Mr. Costello. And each of you, again, will be answering this question, so think about it while Mr. Costello is answering. Mr. Costello, how would you like to see the Bridge Street Bridge project proceed?
I'd very much like to see the Bridge Street Bridge look just like it does right now. When we're done with whatever we're going to do with it, I'd like, when you approach it, that you see the same structure we have here. I'd like it to continue to be a through fare so the traffic can continue to go in both directions. We've seen some possible options have been floated out there. They haven't been brought to the council yet. I understand that we may have some problems with the supporting structure underneath, and I think we're going to have to really pay attention to that. I don't want to trash it, but I do want it to look like it does at the top. I want it to be preserved so that it will continue to be the bridge that we've had for as long as we've had it. Hope that we can do that.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon?
The Bridge Street Bridge project is kind of a catch-22 for the city. On one hand, you have a beautiful historic bridge that isn't load-bearing anymore. The width is also not up to standards. So we have that predicament, yet we have a lot of funding coming in from the state that will help us restore that bridge. But in order to do so, the options are to change it very dramatically. The bridge is historical, and it's very difficult to combine the funding needs and combine the structural needs and keep that bridge intact. So one of the options is to take the elements of our current bridge and kind of do a combination of it. That isn't really what the public wishes, which makes this a very difficult project and problem to solve. So hopefully there's a town in Harrellsville, California, who got funding to restore, and that's what we're really looking into. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
First of all, the bridge is a load-bearing bridge. I am for preserving the bridge structure to the highest extent that we can, and I think we can do it. I'm not in favor of a look-alike or a reproduction of what's there now. I think to be historically accurate and historically authentic, we can and should save the entire bridge. And there are ways to deal with the underlying structure and still do that. And the staff is working hard to come up with those options. Originally, we didn't think there would be funding for that, but in fact, there is funding to preserve that bridge in an authentic way and still make it safe for travel. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. We'll start with Mrs. Harmon this time. Mrs. Harmon, now that redevelopment agency funds are gone, how can the city come up with ways to promote economic development?
I think it really has to do with taking a look at our fee structures, taking a look at some of the parameters, and talking to the business community to find out what it is that brought them to our community. What are the positive aspects? What are any impediments, perhaps, that might prevent their business from growing or be a deterrent to come to our city? I also think when we look at our budget, we really need our city. We're very fortunate that our city is very fiscally conservative in its approach. But I really think we need to take a look at all of the aspects of our funding so that when development needs arise, that we're forward thinking about it and putting money back for special projects to take the place of those loss of the redevelopment agency money.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
Well, first of all, I would have anybody that has a doubt that we're dealing with this issue to go to the general plan and look at the economic element that was commented on by the chamber, that was commented on by different business owners in the city, and know that that was a part of the that was a project in which we listened to the community. So rather than sit here and talk about that, I would just say look at that part of what's been done to look where we're going from here. And from a city's perspective and from a staff perspective, they've been working hard at streamlining the development process to make it a less frustrating experience for people coming through, because the frustration has always been that it takes longer than it should and you're going through too many committees and too many steps. So the city has been working on that and has done a good job so far slowly getting it in the right direction. So those are the things I would suggest at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Costello?
Thank you. First, I'd like to point out that we've gone through some very difficult economic times the past few years, and the city has adapted quite well to that. We've shrunken staff without laying people off. I think we had to lay two people off over a period of 4 years and still managed to maintain services. We also managed to relocate City Hall and get all of the departments into one location. So it's like one-stop shopping. So if someone comes in and they are trying to pursue putting into a business, all of the people they need to talk to are in one place now. I think we have to be very realistic, though. We're not going to get a lot of head of household jobs here. It's just not realistic to think we don't have space for industrial growth. We don't have space for large box stores. We don't want box stores. So we're going to have to look for retails, tourist-serving industry. That's where we're going to have to find the jobs and businesses that are going to come here. The fees that we charge, we try to be as reasonable as possible with that. We try to raise them as little as possible. But it takes money to pay for services, folks. I'm sorry to say that, but we do have to charge the fees.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start with you, Mr. Brown. It's a bit of a compound question, but I think you all can handle it. How did you or how would you have voted on the City Hall relocation and Rooster Creek project? It should be plural, projects.
Pardon me. Well, I can tell you very clearly the City Hall remodel was too expensive and cost us more than the property was worth. We had to put in a ADA elevator at the cost of $400,000. So I have always had serious concerns about the way that project went forward. So those are my comments on that. And we clearly didn't negotiate that project as good as we could have in terms of the actual underlying real estate. It was a very complicated transaction that went on, and we didn't do a very good job. Secondly, Rooster Creek, I was originally against the facade because I didn't think it matched the village, and I struggled with that. But it's turned out to be a very vibrant, dynamic part of the business community down there, and it's a good thing that we approved it. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Mr. Costello?
Well, I supported what we did. I thought we did a great job of consolidating three different departments into one location in the new City Hall. It was a complicated transaction and involved three buildings that we owned, and we ended up moving it to a building that provided enough space for all of the services that need be in City Hall. Yes, it was expensive. Yes, we had to pay for an elevator. But ADA requirements are not negotiable. I think we came up with a winner. We came up with a good location to put our services and have our staff working in one location where everyone could be together. I'm delighted with the Rooster Creek project. I think that I initially came forward and thought that we could have one-way street, a smaller one-way street on Short Street to get traffic in. Not having to worry about it coming back out would not affect traffic on Branch. But as far as the business has gone and what it's done to spruce up the area and bring people in, I'm delighted. And I supported it. I'll continue to support it.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon?
Thank you. Given the circumstances, I think one of the goals for that project was really focusing on how the city staff could be all co-located in one area. If the selection was keeping it in our village area, it seems like that where they are now was one of the most viable options because it did create the co-location of the staff. I think it made the staff and the departments run more efficiently. And as far as the Rooster Creek project, I think it's a really good example of how we can blend new design and new growth and blend it with our historical culture. Maybe at first people thought it was a little, maybe not quite as good a fit for the village, but now that it's kind of grown on people and it's vibrant and active, I think it's a really good example of how we can still grow in our village but maintain the historical charm. My only problem with it is that I really would have liked Short Street to be closed so we'd have an open plaza area between the two restaurants. I think it's very dangerous to have those cars coming in that area. Thank you.
Okay, next question. We'll start with you, Mr. Costello. What ideas do you have for improving the East Grand Avenue corridor?
Well, I think the East Grand corridor needs a lot of work. I'd like to see new businesses stimulated to go in there. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think we're going to see a great deal of head of household jobs coming forward with large businesses. So I think we're going to need to focus on tourist serving and retail outlets, retail shops. A lot of people come to this community, a lot of people come to this part of the state to enjoy the weather, to enjoy the location. I think we need to capitalize on that, and we need to bring more and more people in. I think we need to take advantage of the wine-growing region we have here and get people to come visit us and spend a few days and enjoy our weather, drop a few dollars in the businesses here.
Okay, Mrs. Harmon.
For the East Grand Corridor, I think one of the major steps that is going to be happening, it's in plan check right now, but it has to do with the revitalization of that shopping center right on the corner of North Elm and East Grand. If anybody has seen the plans for that, it's going to be a showcase, and I really think that is going to be a really good starting point to kind of see how the rest of the corridor develops. I also know that staff are in the process of trying to complete a study that will actually focus on a plan to what I'd really like to see is to have the draw just as the village does, and that it goes all the way down East Grand, and it's as vital as our current village. So I'm excited to have an opportunity, if I'm fortunate enough, to be a part of that process. And I really think we need to focus our efforts on East Grand. The village, it's almost like East Grand is like a little stepchild, you know? The village gets a lot of attention, as it should. It's time to look at the East Grand corridor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Well, first of all, I think the Cookie Crock Center that she just mentioned is going to be key, and I got to give credit where credit is due. Steve Adams worked long and tirelessly to get that project going. There was a lease, a long-term lease, that was a problem with getting that developed, and he worked and worked and worked and finally got that resolved. So he deserves the credit for that. Additionally, he's worked to get money from the, I believe, PG&E to do undergrounding on East Grand Avenue, which will be a huge beautifying effect. I just hate power poles and overhead wires. I think it doesn't do anything for the community. And then lastly, I think you're going to see Nick Tompkins' project on the corner of Cortland be another linchpin where we start getting more stimulation. And they convinced me that if we got some revitalization there, that a lot of the empty buildings that we currently have on that area are probably going to start filling up if we can get some foot traffic down there. So I'm very hopeful, and I'm very excited about what we're going to see in the next year or two. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question will start with Mrs. Harmon. What makes you the best candidate for city council?
I think for me, it has to do with a new perspective that I would bring to the city council. I've had many years of county government service. Some of the people I've spoke to as I've been out going door to door are kind of concerned about my county government experience because they think I'm just another bureaucrat. And what I really need the people to understand is that bureaucrats ain't all bad. Because what it does for what it would bring to the city council and why I'm the best candidate is that I have a really unique set of skills related to strategic planning, related to cost analysis, related to building in outcome measures when we determine our budgets to make sure that we are spending the taxpayers' dollars as judiciously as we are supposed to be. And I really think just me being a challenger and having new ideas is really why one of the reasons I'm the best candidate for this position. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Well, quite simply because of my record. If you look at my record, I'll stand on anything I've done.
What's that? Can't hear me back there? So, anyway, so I stand on my record. I've learned. I've matured from being on the Planning Commission to hearing from all different stakeholders and realizing that this job is not about me. It's about you. It's about the community. And that means sometimes putting my own personal belief systems aside and listening to the community, and I think I'm pretty good at it. So, and I have a lot of experience in dealing with both the city staff and with the public, so I think this is not a job you just jump into and you're great at it. It takes time and energy to get where I am, and quite comfortable with where I'm at now in the job. Thank you.
Mr. Costello.
Well, I'll go to my experience. I've had, as I said, I had 4 years on the Planning Commission. I've had 12 years working on the City Council. Aside from being on the City Council, when you're on the Council, you also have ancillary duties you need to perform. I've been on the APCD, the Air Pollution Control District Board, for 12 years. I was on the Zone 3 Water Advisory Committee for about 7 years. And I've been with the Five Cities Fire Authority, both the Consolidation Committee and now on the board itself for about 8 years now total. So I have a lot of experience with dealing with government processes. Also, I was a department head prior to coming here and moving to this part of the state. I was with the University of San Francisco Public Safety Department. I was the department head there for about 6 years, and I managed a budget of $5 million. So I've done the dollars and cents issues, too. I've got an MBA. I understand finance, and I think I'll stand on my record, too. I'm proud of what I've done. I've got integrity, and I think I've represented the people. I've listened when you've spoken, and I'll continue to do so.
Okay, next question. We'll start with you, Mr. Brown. What, in your opinion, is the best way for us to keep our water supply?
Don't use it?
Good answer.
Well, that's a tough question. I think the water supply is a function of actual rain and the aquifers. And I was just telling someone earlier, that's one of the biggest issues we're going to run into. And we need to plan for long beyond this generation. The people that put in Lopez Dam did it at a time when they didn't really need Lopez Dam. And I was reminded, I was at dinner the other night, and I was reminded that it's those city fathers that had thought far enough ahead, and we need to start doing that with water currently. All the conservation in the world is not going to get us where we need to be. It just won't do it. We're in for some serious problems in the next 10 years, and if we don't understand that now, somebody's going to pay the price. And so that's what we need to focus on, is thinking ahead and thinking what those options might be.
Mr. Costello, same question.
Well, we at the Council have looked at this for a number of years, both for long, medium, and short-term considerations for the water supply. I think it's critical to realize that the climate is changing. We're not going to see normal rainfall anymore. Hopefully, we're going to see some wet years, then some dry years, and then some more wet years. So I think we have to plan for a smaller supply. That in mind, I think we have to conserve where we can. And once we get people to start doing that on a consistent basis, we've seen in other communities that once people start conserving, they continue to conserve. But I think the key thing for me is we dump 4 million gallons of water a day into the ocean, outflow from our sanitation plant. It's critical that we find a way to treat that water one more time, get tertiary treatment in there, and then we can put it back into the ground supply. We can recharge the aquifers. I think we need to stop putting that water in the ocean, and we need to find an economical way to use that water, and that'll go a long way to helping recharge the aquifer and will help our groundwater supply.
Mrs. Harmon.
I think the key for the water supply issue really has to do with reviewing our regulations. I know we're limited in what we can do with state regulations, but I think at the county level, if we take a review of the regulations that prevent the use of clarified water, which is now being discharged into the ocean, and take a look at how that could be used and how we could bridge the gap to actually recharge our groundwater basins, that would be the first step. Also, securing the funding and being very aggressive and pursuing what funding resources there might be for recycling infrastructure, which would then help bring whatever treated water, whether it's from the sanitation district or perhaps from refined water from Phillips 66 processing, that we could then offset some of the other water needs that we need for household uses and things by implementing those types of elements.
Thank you. We'll start with Mr. Costello on this question. This is a two-part question. Are you concerned about the high-density Cherry Avenue development of 51 houses on 12 acres? What about existing traffic problems on Cherry Avenue and Allen Street?
Oh, that's the two parts. Okay.
Those are the two parts.
Yeah, I am a little bit concerned about it. We talk about wanting higher density on our projects and trying to meet our housing needs according to the standards that we get from the state. Matter of fact, we're going to be looking at that tomorrow night, our housing element. I think we need to take a very good look at that location and see what's going to fit properly. I do appreciate that Cherry Street is going to be impacted, and we have to look very carefully at that. We may need to expand the street. If that means we have to shrink the project a bit, that's something we'll have to look at. But any time a project comes forward, we have to look at all of the things that impact it, that impact the existing neighborhoods, and take a look at what's right, not just for the project, but for the neighborhood it fits into and for our community as a whole. So I think we have to take a good long look at it, and we'll see whether or not Cherry needs to be expanded a bit. We'll have to see.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon?
The high density was before the city council for pre-application process. And I guess the thing for me is I couldn't wrap it around my brain why high density housing is what everybody seems to be looking for in our city. When I see other high-density projects, and actually our city being compared to one that's at in San Luis Obispo City, it just really doesn't fit with our demographics. So I would really want to look at why the high-density is there. And then we already have traffic issues on East Cherry. There's speed issues. There's narrow issues. The project doesn't have enough parking to accommodate it. Then you have the Japanese American Association's land, which would have to actually have a bypass through it for emergency. It just right now seems like it needs a lot of work. And likewise, the project on Cortland also has severe traffic circulations, and I really need to take a harder look at high-density housing. I just don't see that it fitting with our demographics. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much. A couple things on that project. One is East Cherry needs to be widened. There's no doubt about it. It's a very, very dangerous street. I talked to the neighbors. They can't even get to their mailboxes without taking their life in their hands. Secondly, the projects that's being proposed is actually, if you do the math, is using the street for part of their guest parking, and that's not a good thing. Thirdly, I'm all for the ag preservation, and that's going to be my biggest issue. This is our first big test of the general plan ag mitigation policies. Lastly, the density actually is not all that high. It's 5 units per acre, and our typical is 4.5. So it does look dense, but the reason it looks dense is I think it's poorly designed. They have a 10-foot internal road, which is substandard. There's ways they could make that project work, widen the road, and make it have a feeling of being less dense. And it's got some work to do that. It's not quite there yet. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll begin with Mrs. Harmon on this question. What city services would you consider sharing with neighboring cities to improve services?
I have to think about that one. I know we're already sharing our the fire services. I, at this point, really don't have any recommendations related to that. I know at one point the police departments were considering consolidation. And I guess for me, for consolidation of services, you really have to have a really thoughtful plan for that. You really have to do a lot of cost analysis. It might sound like a really good idea in premise, but if you don't really crunch the numbers and really look at the outcomes and set goals of what it could accomplish, it might actually backfire regarding cost savings and duplicative services. In premise, I think it's a good idea, but to have a specific for you this evening, I really don't have one.
Mr. Brown.
We've been trying to do police services for quite some time, and politically that's been almost impossible. So that was going to be a step-by-step project where we actually worked with dispatch first, deal with dispatch, and then deal with the greater aspects of trying to put it together. That didn't turn out either, and so now we have a very good cost-saving issue with dispatch, which I'm glad to talk about later, but it's saving us $100,000 a year. But right now, it's been police, and that's been the toughest thing. I think the bigger question now is, what do we do with Five Cities Fire, and how do we get that on its feet now that the bond didn't pass, and where do we go from here? I think that's the bigger question.
Mr. Costello.
Well, let me start with the fire service since people have been talking about it. I think we did a lot to get to where we are now. About 12 years ago, we had a meeting in here with Pismo, Grover, Rio Grande, Oceano. It was decided there's no way we could ever consolidate fire services because Pismo was spending $140 a head, Grover Beach was spending about $80, Rio Grande was spending $97 a head, and Oceano was $40 a head. Well, we've got to where we are now, and I think we'll get there. We're going to continue to refine that. We did a step-by-step analysis for the fire department. For the police department, we had good numbers. We had an analysis done by our chief with Grover Beach's chief, and the numbers made sense. It looked great. Grover Beach didn't want to go for it. I do think we can consolidate police services, but it's going to take time to get there and overcome the political hurdles. I think we should look at sharing public work services, too. I think we should look at our parks and rec services, anything where we can combine resources and shrink the management over the top of it and put more people at the service level, it's a winner. And I think we ought to be examining all of these things as we go forward.
Thank you. Our next question will start with Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown, do you support the current effort by Rio Grande to eliminate prevailing wage? If so, why?
Yes, I do, absolutely. Prevailing wage has stopped more projects than it's helped, and that's part of the issue with some of the projects that like the rec center. We could have saved $600,000 on the rec center if we didn't have to pay prevailing wage. The current state of the law is now still, however, that as soon as we accept federal money of any kind, we still have to pay prevailing wage. And unless the law changes, that's the way it's going to continue to be. So this idea that this lot of out-of-town unions are coming forward. Oh, guess who's calling now? Sorry, folks.
Go ahead. We'll wait, Mr. Brown.
No, that's fine. You probably don't want to hear that conversation. So anyway, I just want to say that the hysteria over the union groups that come in and are worried about prevailing wage, just need to look at the current law of the state of California, and I'm hoping they can be a little less worried than they currently are.
Thank you. Mr. Costello?
I do support the changes we're looking to make on prevailing wages, but as Tim just said, it's only going to apply in certain cases. The way the law is set up, federal dollars come in, state dollars come in, you still have to do prevailing wage. There are only going to be certain limited cases where we're going to be able to not have to pay prevailing wage. Another side issue of this concept, though, was the issue that we could accept donated services, donated goods. We can't do that right now. So part of the changes we're making in trying to go to the charter city with the prevailing wage included that. So I do support it. I don't think that it's as big of an issue as has been made out to be by some of the unions that came forward. I'm a union member myself. I think unions have a very important place in society. But I don't think that the prevailing wage issue is going to prevent us from going forward, and it will be only in very limited cases. So, yeah, I do support it.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon.
First, I'd really like to encourage everyone who has not already done so to read our charter draft. It spells out very specifically how prevailing wage would be utilized and in what areas and under what confines we would have the flexibility not to use it. It would be under those circumstances, which would actually be a benefit to our city as well as the taxpayers. I also think that the charter is so much more than just prevailing wage. The gentleman mentioned the flexibility it would give us, and I know, for example, the Women's Club is trying to do a kitchen remodel, and based on the current structure that we have now, there's an estimate that that's going to cost them an additional $60,000 to $80,000 based on the lack of flexibility we have with how we set up the bid process for that. So that's something to keep in mind, and I think everybody just needs to read the charter and keep a level head because it does not exclude us from using prevailing wages. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll start with Mr. Costello next. Some of these questions, by the way, contain some conclusions that haven't been verified by me or the chamber, so keep that in mind. This question is an example. It says, how is it the police department is running 100% over budget, unverified conclusion, and what would you do to keep this from occurring again?
I don't believe that the police department is running 100% over budget.
Mrs. Harmon, do you have a response to this question?
What he said.
Mr. Brown?
It's just simply not true.
Okay. We'll start with Mr. Costello again, since that was so quick. Okay. Again, unverified conclusions are contained in this question. With this council saying it will be more transparent, other than less closed-door meetings, what would you do to be more transparent?
Well, the only reason we have closed-door meetings is because we have to have closed-door meetings. If we're dealing with labor negotiations, if we're dealing with employee personnel matters, those are closed-door meetings. You have to have them as closed-door sessions. And you can't discuss what you're doing there. I'm always open to anyone approaching me. I listen to what people have to say, and I'll continue to do so.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon.
Well, I think the best way is to be very clear in the decision-making process, to take the time to really explain to people why it is that we are making a decision, whether it's based on the confines of the housing element, some other restriction, the general plan, but to make sure that when things go forward, that the public really has an opportunity to understand and maybe not put the matter on a consent agenda so there's more there's more opportunity for discussion. And I also think that if the city council says that it's going to follow through with something, that it really needs to, for the benefit of the public's trust, to really follow through with what they're intending. And if not, make sure that they're very clear on what are the obstructions or what new information came in where they weren't able to follow through with what was originally planned. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
Transparency is about communicating. It's about being open. And it's about being honest. And I'm all about that. That's who I am, sometimes to my detriment. And I make no apologies for the fact that I feel that I am transparent. And I'll tell you right how I feel. And I'll listen to how you feel. And I'll come to, hopefully a good decision-making process by doing that. So, yes, Joe's right. We cannot, as much as I'd like to, we cannot talk about what goes on in closed session. I'd love to. Believe me, I could write a book. But I can't, so that's how it stands. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon, we'll start with you on this next question. What position will you urge the city to take as far as supporting the five cities' homeless coalition's efforts to create a shelter in the local area? Again, unverified conclusion. I don't know that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is creating a shelter in the area, but assuming it's true.
Thank you for that caveat. For me, I think it is so important for our five cities to have autonomy as it relates to the homeless population that we have. I think we have a very unique demographic set that San Luis City, San Luis County does not have, and I would totally support whatever effort, whatever resources that the city can bring to establishing more services and a shelter for our homeless people. And I would love if the grant that was available about a half a year ago, if we could bring the Good Samaritan shelter services that are currently in Santa Maria up here so we would have our own detox facility as well, our city would just, that would just be a tremendous service to our homeless people as well as the people that are suffering from abuse. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
Well, I would just say this. One of the things about doing the homeless shelter has been not in my backyard. Nobody wants it in their backyard. So that's been a difficulty in finding a location, and Jim Guthrie could speak to that. Councilman Guthrie could speak to that better than I could. Absolutely, I would support a shelter. I think we need to be fortunate enough to live here. We should be able to help those people out that are either having mental health problems, substance abuse problems, whatever it might be. and take care of them as well as, to the best of our ability, while giving them some personal responsibility along the way.
Thank you, Mr. Costello.
Well, I'll echo the point that Jim Guthrie is our representative on the coalition that's working on this. I don't think it's unique to Arroyo Grande, and it's not something that's specific to Arroyo Grande. We do need to work with Grover Beach and Oceano and solve this problem collectively. Much as we talk about consolidating services for lease and fire, when you work together, you're able to accomplish a lot more. There is a NIMBY problem here. We saw the problem with People's Kitchen that was in Grover Beach, where people did not want it there. We're going to have to work on this together and go forward and find an appropriate location that will not conflict with the existing neighborhoods. And I think you have to work carefully to make that happen, but it can be done. And it's just something we have to work as a team. It's not something Arroyo Grande is going to solve on its own. We're going to work with our churches. We're going to work with our volunteer agencies. We're going to work with the other communities, and we have to go forward collectively to accomplish this. And I support doing that.
Okay, we have time for one final question. We've had lots of questions on this subject, so I feel compelled to ask it against my better judgment, perhaps. In light of recent events relating to the Adams-McLeish incident, can you give us your thoughts on the vote of no confidence from the Police Officers Association? If you are or had been on the council, how would you have liked to have seen this handled? And we will start with Mr. Brown.
Well, first of all, I've been pretty vocal about the fact that I believe we should have done an independent investigation to begin with. There, public officials are held to a higher standard, or at least if they're not, they should be. I know that if anybody else had done that, they probably still wouldn't be working. So that being said, I think Steve and Teresa are worthy employees. They've been great people for this city. I'm not going to take away what they've done, but I'm totally supportive, and we wouldn't be talking about it now if we'd have done an independent investigation to begin with. Regarding the POA, I want to apologize to them if they think in some way we slighted them, because I know you have integrity, I have integrity, and I have no doubt that you did what you needed to do. So I fully support them, and I'm hoping that now that we are doing an independent investigation, we'll soon be able to get past this and get on to the real business of the city.
Thank you. Mr. Costello?
Well, the question, as I recall you asking it, was what do I think about the vote of no confidence? And I'll confine my comments mainly to that. Okay. Five police officers responded to the incident, all wrote reports or wrote statements, not necessarily reports. We based the decisions we made on the statements they made. They did their job. As far as I understand, nobody pressured them to alter or change their statements or soft soap their statements. They wrote their statements. We had the deputy city attorney investigate, speak with them, speak with the principals involved. Yes, an error in judgment was made. Discipline was handed down. So I'm a little disappointed in the vote of no confidence. I wish that they would have come forward. If they have something more to say, I wish they would have said it. And if there's more to be said, the independent investigation will bring it forward. And like I said, let's chips fall where they may. I'll take the findings from that and go forward. But they did their jobs, and I've got no problem with what they did.
Thank you. Mrs. Harmon?
I think the public needs to really understand that by the police department having taking a vote of no confidence, it's a very serious issue for any association to do. So I think that kind of underlies how serious that action was for our city. But like I said, on August 30th, I stated that an independent investigation was warranted from the onset. I base this on my experience with Santa Barbara County government. Public trust is paramount. If a matter was even remotely perceived to place the department or county at risk, an independent investigation by someone outside the agency would be eliminated. And even with the council reversing their decision, I think primarily based on the vote of no confidence, even with that action, council members still believe that another investigation would still bring the same outcome. But it's so much more than just the outcome. It's about trust. It's about our city's credibility and the big picture. The city needs to examine and conduct a complete review of its policies pertaining to management. It needs to establish a clear protocol that invokes an independent investigation that would examine any conduct of this nature to safeguard the city from liability and to safeguard another vote of no confidence by our police department association. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harmon. So that'll conclude the question and answer period. We'll give each of you 3 minutes to give your final pitch to the voters. We started with you, Mr. Brown, last time, so we'll start with Mrs. Harmon this time and work our way towards me. Mrs. Harmon, 3 minutes.
Closing. Thank you. Since launching my campaign, I have been walking precincts and taking the time to speak to residents. It has been a great experience meeting everyone. I've heard what people had to say, discussed issues, and met with them individually. It is apparent from these discussions that residents are indeed ready for a new perspective. I have talked to business owners and developers. I have done my homework and have taken my preparation to serve as your city council member seriously. I understand the importance of maintaining a big picture perspective while focusing on the individual issue before me. I understand the value of making decisions that are not based on emotion, but based on facts and thoughtful analysis. To make decisions that advocate what is best for the city and its residents, and not what is best for one's personal interests or an enforcement of an agenda. Over the past 4 months, as I've been talking to residents, a question keeps resonating. It is about whether I can remain strong enough to maintain an independence when making decisions on behalf of the citizens of Aurora Grande. And here's my answer. As your council member, I represent you, the voters, not city staff, not other fellow council members. I will be truthful when I make a stand, and you will know where I stand on issues, even if we do not agree. You see, it's about having the courage to say no, having the courage to face the truth, doing the right thing because it is right, as these are the keys to living one's life with integrity. It's about leadership. It's about a new perspective. Help me realize this and vote for me November 4th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Harmon. Mr. Costello, closing remarks.
Thank you. I've been doing this for 12 years. I did 4 years on the Planning Commission before that. What we look at when we sit and evaluate a project or something that comes before us is the municipal code, city code. That's our constitution. Sometimes I don't necessarily personally approve of the issue that's before me, but I will look at what the code says, what the standards are, and I'll make my evaluation based on that. I'll listen to what you, the people, have to say about it. And if I disagree with you and it's against the code, I'll tell you, and I'll tell you why I disagree with you. But if I think you've got the right issue and you've got right behind you, I take great weight to that and will consider what you've got to say. It's been my privilege to represent you, and I'd ask that you re-elect me. I look forward to serving another 4 years and doing what's best for the community and the city and helping Arroyo Grande move forward into the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Well, first of all, as Joe said, it is an opportunity and an honor to serve the citizens of Arroyo Grande, and I do it with great pride. I've spent 11 years between Planning Commission and City Council, and I am very transparent. I'm very open to listening to all sides of an issue. So that's why I would request your vote. In addition, when I say I'm standing on my record, I want to just point to a few things. Over the recessionary period, the city has eliminated 14 full-time and 5 part-time positions during the recession, along with a number of concessions negotiated with labor unions. We have gone to county dispatch with the sheriff's department that saves us $100,000 annually. The current general fund is approximately $14 million, and the current general fund reserve is approximately 27%. That should be something we should all be proud of. Economic efforts have been recently done, our Panera Bread. We have the new restaurant at the JJ's Market. We have renovation for the Cookie Crock Center. We have undergrounding of utilities. We have grant funding for street improvements in the village. We recently established a tourism business improvement district to improve tourism. We've done affordable housing with people self-help housing and Habitat for Humanity. We're upgrading all streets on a 7-year cycle. Briscoe Road Interchange is going to be a huge issue for this city, and that's coming forward. The police building remodel is happening, and it's, while I've had my frustrations with it, we did it without bond measures, and that should say something. We currently have an upgrade of the corporate yard that needs to get done, and that's still in progress, but I'm happy that's getting done as well. So the long and short of it is I stand on my record. I'm available to any of you. My phone number you can get quite easily. I'll give it to you now. It's 805-710-1313. I'm available to anybody that wants to talk to me. Whether you agree with me or not, I'll always listen. And this is, again, not about me. This is about you as a citizen of Arroyo Grande. Thank you.
Thank you. And that will conclude our candidate forum. If you would join me in a round of applause for all of our fine candidates. We appreciate you three being here and answering these questions. And that's it. Thanks for being here.